Welcome to the Collide Podcast. We're a growing community of everyday chicks colliding with Jesus in our mess, our pain, our joy, and our stories. We value showing up as we truly are, so that's what you'll find here. Walls and masks being torn down so that we can allow Jesus to meet us where we truly are and hear about other women doing the same. We can't wait to collide with you.
Any chance that I have grief, to not run from it, which is really kind of an easier thing to do, I think, is to run from it, to figure out ways to distract myself from it, to fill those gaps. But it has been when I over and over take it to Jesus' feet and I acknowledge whatever that loss is that I'm feeling in that moment.
Welcome to the Collide Podcast. I'm Willow Weston, the founder and director of Collide, and today I'm so excited to have Kristen Than on. Kristen is a friend of mine. She's a mom of two amazing boys who are 12 and 15. She's also an incredibly gifted licensed mental health therapist who specializes in trauma work with children and teens, but she sees a variety of clients, and she's a facilitator of divorce care at her church. She enjoys walking people through hard stories, especially walking women who are trying to heal following betrayal in their marriage to a place of healing. She's passionate about watching Jesus show up in amazing ways in her own life and the life of others and helping others see that same hope. And so I'm super excited to have her on the podcast today to have a candid conversation about divorce and the pain that comes from divorce and the hope on the other side for those who are feeling that pain. So Kristen, thank you for hopping on today.
Oh, Willow, thank you. I'm super happy to be here too. I'm really excited to have this conversation with you.
Yeah, you know, I have known you for years. In fact, the first time we met was at a retreat, and I remember I was speaking at that retreat and I met you, and I left that retreat thinking, wow, that Kristen, she just lights up a room. She's magnetic, charismatic, loving, full of joy, encouraging, including everyone at the retreat. And at the time, you were married, you know, you had your two kiddos, and here we are years later, and we're having this conversation, probably, I'm assuming, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, a conversation that you, at that time when I met you, never pictured yourself having about the pain of divorce. And you've walked through so much pain in your own divorce story, and now you're helping others in theirs. And I just love your heart and your strength and the way that you have continued to look for God in the midst of this painful journey that you've had with divorce. And so I want to talk about the divorce experience. And I mean, I'll be the first to say, like, I'm currently married. I don't say currently, like I'm planning on getting a divorce tomorrow, but I'm no one to have much wisdom on this. I really am hoping we can learn from you. And I recognize everyone has differing reasons that they experience divorce. Would you say that no matter what the circumstance is for divorce, that grief is universal for all those who walk through it?
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, grief is so complicated, and the grief following divorce is, I feel like, even more complex, because when you're grieving someone that you've lost who's passed away, that is painful. And I don't want to take away from that, but they're gone. And so you come to an acceptance at some point that they're gone and they're not coming back. When you grieve divorce, it's like you're grieving the living. They're still there. And if you have children, you're still interacting with them on a somewhat regular basis. It's not like it's a one and done where you can get over it and get through it. It's constant. There's constant reminders, and there's constant things that we come into contact with in our life that sort of challenge that grieving process. Everybody grieves in their own way, but there is something very universal about grief in and of itself and the steps that we go through and the process that we go through. And with divorce, it's different, because I think unless you go through it, I don't know how many people really recognize how difficult it is and the steps of grief that someone has to go through. I think that's why we have things like divorce care and support groups around people who have been divorced, because unless you've actually gone through it, sort of the impact of the way it impacts your daily life, it impacts your hopes and dreams, it impacts your beliefs about yourself, it calls all these things into question. So yeah, I think it's complex and different than just losing someone. You're losing someone that you still have to interact with or watch interact in the world without you.
Wow, that's a powerful concept, the idea of grieving the living. And I feel like there's so many layers to the grief that you experience when you get a divorce. And so much of grief is recognizing loss. And I think a lot of people who haven't been divorced just assume the loss you're experiencing is that you're no longer married to the person you love, that somehow you lost them. But it seems like there's a lot of other loss besides the obvious, which is that you're no longer married to the person that you thought you'd be married to forever. There's social losses, financial losses. I mean, can you kind of invite us into some of the other losses that people experiencing divorce are grieving?
Yeah. So there's like the obvious physical loss, right? Like he's not here anymore. Your spouse is no longer here. And on top of that, there's no one to help me do the dishes at night. There's no one to pick up the slack around the house. There's no one to help me juggle those balls that are happening in my life every day. So that's kind of more of the obvious things. But more of the subtle things are like when I go to bed at night and I'm processing and struggling through maybe something that I've struggled with my kiddo during the day, or a particular discipline that I feel like I need to really step up my game on. I don't have someone to process that with. I feel like I'm on my own in that area. Friendships. My friends have been fantastic, but the ones who are still married, I do often feel kind of like a third wheel when I'm over. They've been wonderful and inviting, but there still is that piece that when I go to dinner, I don't have a partner to bring. I don't have someone that the guys can sort of connect around. There's a loss of my future dreams. Nobody gets married with the intent of not spending the rest of your life with someone, or growing old with someone, or having someone know you so well and then leave, or having someone. Here's a big one for me. When I look at my children and I love them more than anything in the entire universe, the only other person besides God who also feels the same about them isn't around to share that experience with. So I can look at them and love them, but I don't get to share that experience with the other person that helped make those children, who feels the same way about them. So there are moments that I feel super proud of them and I want to share that. And sometimes I do reach out and share that if I'm in a place where that feels safe, but a lot of times I don't. And I have to sort of just rejoice in that inside on my own. And that feels like a loss.
Yeah. Wow, Kristen. I mean, just listening to you talk, I feel like it's inviting me into a deeper compassion for this experience. I mean, I really think somehow maybe our culture or something, we simplify the loss that comes with divorce. You're just starting to list off stuff. I'm imagining you could probably continue listing off the different losses you recognized.
Right.
And we could do that for the next half hour. I mean, or longer, right? I'm curious though, if you were bombarded slowly by all these losses. I mean, were you surprised by the full depth of how much loss accompanied the breakup of you and your husband, or were you expecting this when you saw divorce was coming down the pike for you?
No, I think that's a really good question, because I think of it like it comes in layers. I had no idea. Like, you really do look at divorce and you think it's that loss of that spouse, right? And initially that was really intense for me. The sorrow and the sadness and the grief was really intense. So that was sort of my focus, was on myself and my own pain. And then as I slowly started to work through and move through that, other things would come up. Like then I would notice my kids and what that loss was like for them. And then I would recognize, I'd get to the end of my day and think, I'm exhausted. Well, yeah, I'm exhausted because I've had to do all my work around this house as well as pick up the slack that he used to do. Or when something goes wrong with the house, that's a big trigger for me. The toilet breaks. And then I recognize I'm on my own in this. I have to call somebody, or I've actually gotten really good at fixing toilets, or repairing garbage disposals. But those are the kind of things that I don't recognize that's a loss until I'm faced with it. So I would say it happens in layers or in stages.
Yeah. And you brought up earlier that we all grieve differently, and grief isn't linear, right? So we experience, you know, denial and anger and deep sadness, all of these different emotions at differing times. What was that like for you? I mean, did you experience like moments where you were still holding on to hope that it'd work out, and then moments where you felt like you had to let go, or moments where you felt anger, or moments where you felt peace, or moments where you felt deeply sad and alone, and moments where you felt really met by God? I mean, what was that like? Did you experience vacillating feelings, and how did that feel?
Yeah. Again, another really good question, because I think that is so true. It is not linear. And I have never, there have been times where I've got up from my time with God and thought, you have really healed me. I'm in a place of healing and I feel okay. And then tomorrow I'll wake up and think, oh my gosh, I'm back here again. This just hurts. And I don't know if that will ever completely go away. Divorce is one of those things that, like, you're one with someone, you're united with someone, and you create a life, you create dreams, you create hopes with this person. And I think it's a slow untangling of all those things that happens. And I will say that God has met me every step of the way. And it's been really important for me to take it to like the feet of Jesus, any chance that I have grief, to not run from it, which is really kind of an easier thing to do, I think, is to run from it, to figure out ways to distract myself from it, to fill those gaps. But it has been when I over and over take it to Jesus' feet and I acknowledge whatever that loss is that I'm feeling in that moment. I think that's an important piece, is taking stock of those losses and recognizing that they were valuable to me, and that it's okay that I'm grieving, that I don't have someone to help me fix the toilet, or that I don't have someone to walk with me through a difficult season in my parenting. To answer your question, Willow, I think it's just, and yes, I did go back and forth between hope and grief, because it's, I don't know if you'd call it denial, but it's really like has this really actually happened? And I go through that. Even now, I wake up some mornings and I think, wow, I'm not married. I don't have the life that I envisioned myself having.
You know, there's so many things I want to break down that you just said. One of them is you talk about running from grief, that you would take it to Jesus rather than running from grief. What are some examples? I mean, you work with people, you teach divorce care, you see people's tendencies, you see their unhealthy coping mechanisms. I mean, what are some indicators that we're running from grief?
Yeah. Well, I think that one of those things is when we're not acknowledging the losses, and when we're not taking stock in all the things that we're currently feeling, I think it's important to recognize those things instead of saying, you know, I think I'm good. I think I'm good. I think God is, you know, God's healed me. I think I'm fine. Another thing is throwing ourselves into things, like whether it's throwing ourselves into our work, throwing ourselves into like, I'm going to go out with my friends every single night and I'm going to forget about this mess called divorce. And I am going to just live it up and I'm going to show my ex I am happy and I am over them. I think a lot of times people can turn to substances to sort of numb that grief, turn to relationships. That's a big one that I see is, well, there's someone out there that is going to love me and I'm going to prove to myself that I am still lovable. And I prove to my ex that, well, look what you missed out on. All those things. I've seen all of those things play out in people's lives. And I think a lot of it comes from the fear of feeling that pain. Because it is painful and it's bigger than I think sometimes we feel like we can handle. And when those moments came for me and I recognized this is too much, this is too big for me, I knew that's when I had to go to God. That's when I had to go to the feet of Jesus and just say, can't do it. I can't do it. Here's what I want to do. I want to run. I want to hide. I want to get myself involved in something else, but I'm not going to. I'm going to trust that you can help make me whole. And that you can help hold some of this pain when it feels like too much for me.
Mm-hmm. You bring up so many things that I'm seeing in my friends who are getting divorced. And I have to say, just like pause for a moment. I'm realizing as a friend of people who are breaking up, people I've been friends with for decades, I'm grieving.
Yeah.
And I don't, it's not about me, but there's like a whole nother podcast to do on, I've been thinking so much about like what I'm grieving, like in the loss of my friends together, it's bringing up a lot of stuff, but what I'm seeing in them is all the stuff you're talking about, whether it's, you know, all of a sudden, like they're drinking all the time because they're numbing the pain, or they're replacing the person they were with for 20 years with someone else. And I watch it and it scares me. And it scares me because I just wonder, like, is there going to be a moment where they're going to wake up and realize that that's what they're doing, and that the pain that hurts so badly that they're trying to numb or to take away with someone else, it's still there, but it's even worse because they added, you know, unhealthy coping mechanisms and choices on top of it. And I worry they're going to wake up one day and go, oh my gosh, like almost like an awakening, like, you know. Well, I think about the parable of the lost son and how, you know, he goes out and and the Bible says he comes to his senses. He wakes up and realizes he's eating pig slop, and he looks back at his old life and realizes even his dad's servants eat better than him. And that's what I worry about for my friends is like, how do you walk through this in a healthy way so that you're not actually adding more pain on top of the pain you already felt? And I guess I'm asking you, like, what are you seeing down the road, 6 months, a year, 5 years with people who, instead of taking their pain to God and seeking healing, they're taking their pain and trying to heal themselves, and it's creating more pain. How is that affecting their lives later on?
Right. Yeah. Well, it's interesting that you say that, because I think what is happening is there's two things happening. I think we're afraid of the pain, and it's, so it feels better to numb it and to run away from it. Mm-hmm. The other thing is all those unhealthy messages that we have post-divorce, like I wasn't good enough, I wasn't pretty enough, I wasn't exciting enough, I wasn't worth sticking around for, I wasn't lovable. We're bringing those messages to someone else to answer for us, or someone else to disprove for us. And no one else can do that for us but God. So when you eventually wake up or come to your senses or find yourself down the road, those messages are still not answered. And yet they're still so in question and they're so ingrained, and they still haven't been answered by our God who created us and who longs to answer those questions for us and not have us answer them in substances or in other relationships. So I think this is kind of maybe a more cruder example, but I think of it as like you have a cut and you're bleeding and it needs surgery. You need stitches from the great healer, right? But instead we try to put cloth on it, or we try to put something on it to cover it up, which isn't going to work because you're hemorrhaging. And so you're slowly bleeding on, and then you start bleeding on everyone around you, your pain. And you start, and then you wake up and you're not only bleeding out, you don't have the strength or energy or resources at that point to even help yourself. So I think it takes us further down the path, complicates our pain, and puts us in a place where it's 10 times worse. Or those messages have been even more ingrained. Like, I went looking for the answers to these questions and they still aren't answered 10 years later. And that just like reinforces those messages that we see. I really am not lovable. I really could not find the answer to what I was looking for.
Yeah. I mean, it's so true. And I think it's true, not just of the pain from divorce. It's true in any pain. And we talk about this stuff all the time at Clyde. It's like, I always like to say, like, not dealing is not healing.
Yeah.
Like, you run from your pain because it hurts so bad and you try to make it feel better with all these other things. But until you experience true healing, like allowing God to meet you in your pain, he can handle your pain.
Right.
Jesus is not running from our issues. He is not running from our pain. Like, he's standing there and we're the ones that are like, I'm busy, you know, I don't want to deal with this. And until we receive healing, we are continuing to just topple more pain on top of more pain. Right. And so I love that you're challenging us from your own story, that you learned you cannot run from your grief. You have to take it to Jesus. I want to talk about, what are some of the stigmas that come with the status divorced?
Yeah, I think, I know for me, pre-divorce, without even knowing I was doing it, I think I looked at divorced couples and I just sort of assumed that there was a weakness there. Like, you couldn't make it work. You couldn't stick it out. It was sort of like a flaw as far as they gave up. So I think potentially, I think there's that stigma out there that people just didn't try hard enough, didn't work at it hard enough. And I think there's all kinds of reasons for divorce. But in my own situation, it's like, if people could only see my story and how I had longed for reconciliation and how hard I worked, and truly realizing there are two people involved in a marriage and we can't control or dictate what the other person does. We only have control over ourselves. So I think partially presenting myself as a divorced person, I wonder if people look at me and think, like, gosh, what did she do wrong? Why? And again, it goes back to those messages. Mm-hmm. She didn't do something right in her marriage? Or was she not tolerable? Was she not lovable? Was there something wrong with the way she conducted herself that she just couldn't keep a man around?
It's interesting that you bring up that idea, Kristen, because it sounds like you're hurting. And then you're feeling judged and misunderstood, and you start to believe lies about yourself, and you're looking almost for those lies to be believed by other people. And there might have been lies present even before your marital breakup, but then now they're just kind of accentuated, almost like a highlighter. You know, you feel like there's a highlighter over all your issues, and you wonder if everyone's going to believe you're worthy of being left. And I guess my question to you is, how have you shaken those lies?
Yeah, that has been tough. I think the first place I've had to start is recognizing what those lies are, what the messages that I've had, that I have believed about myself, that I've believed about divorce, that I've believed about my situation and my future. I think it's a recognition of those things. And that's taken prayer time with God, that's taken therapy for myself to understand that, and to understand where those lies came from, and then to try to challenge those, to bring those to God and say, but what do you say about me? What is the truth here? Also surrounding myself with some really wise women who care very much about my long-term healing and health and less about my immediate happiness. They want to see me do well and heal. and be restored and whole again, and less about, oh, Kristen, get your mind off it. You need to just be happy and you need to do what makes you happy in the moment.
I love that you brought up the importance of community, and I want to talk to you about it. I have a lot of questions I want to ask you about this because, you know, you mentioned being hurt in community. In some ways, community can kind of put a stigma on you when you're divorced or going through a divorce, and you can feel judged by people or judged by the church or judged by people who don't understand the pain that led you to this place. And at the same time, community is so important. How important is it to not walk the divorce journey alone?
I think it's pretty essential because of the amount of grief that you experience and the amount of the misunderstanding about divorce. It's one thing we talk about in divorce care, and I hear over and over from people who are in the journey of divorce, is people just don't get it. People don't understand. And I've seen that in my own life where people have looked at me and gone, well, he was a jerk. He did A, B, and C to you. How could you even be sad? Don't you feel relief? Don't you feel happy? And it's like there's this community of people that I have found in divorce care that understand that it's so complex and so much deeper than that, that there are times when I do feel a sense of relief, but other times when I'm confronted with the pain and the loss and need someone to accept and understand that alongside me. I'm kind of an external processor, so I have needed those friends to be kind of my on-call texting friends when I haven't really wanted to talk about it, but I've wanted to write and text about it. So I've sent text after text to friends who just can say, I hear you. Yeah, that's hard. I can't imagine. I hear you. Can I pray for you? What can I do? What do you need? And so that's been super vital to just know there's a lifeline out there too, that I don't have to suffer in it alone.
What are the ways that we're getting it wrong as friends of people walking alongside people going through divorce or people who have gone through a divorce? As a friend who wants to be a good friend to those people, and I'm sure there's so many listening, what are some things we're doing where we're getting it wrong? We're saying the wrong things, we're doing the wrong things, and how can we get it right?
Yeah, well, I think one of the things that is I found very helpful was to just listen. Just listen and acknowledge how painful it really is. Offering up time to be with someone, offering up any kind of help that you can give. I still have friends who bring me flowers on Valentine's Day, things like that. Those little things that you think, wow, she's probably feeling it today. Or just, I have friends who bring me stockings on Christmas full because my kids aren't going to give me a stocking on Christmas. So there's a stocking full of little fun things under the tree. So there's those little things as well as the big things like time commitments. Like, what do you need from me? Can I take you on a hike? Do you want to just talk? Do you want to process? Also, good friends that can speak truth into you. So when they catch me saying things like, well, gosh, I guess I didn't have it. I just wasn't pretty enough. Or I did gain weight after I had my second kid. Those kind of things can stop me and stop those lies right away and say nothing you did warranted that response. Or what does God say about you? And is that a reason to leave your spouse or any of those kinds of things? I think stopping when you hear a lie or when you can start to pick up on a friend putting themselves down or justifying the divorce in a way that is confirming a lie or a message that they hold about themselves and challenging that, I think is helpful.
Yeah, to turn that up a notch, because you mentioned earlier having friends who are concerned about your long-term health and not your just your immediate happiness. How important is it to have friends as well who aren't feeding the hate and, you know, the bitter heart and all that that you can have toward your ex, or aren't telling you, yeah, go beer over it, go sleep it off with other people, go do, You know, like how important is it to, because it's super easy to all of a sudden collect these voices that are just like, do what makes you happy. And yet we've already talked about a lot of the long list of things that make us happy. Actually, it will end up making us feel miserable when we wake up and realize it. And so how have you kind of managed making sure you're having those healthy, truthful voices speaking into your long-term health?
Yeah.
Rather than your immediate self-gratification.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. I am all about distraction. I am all about humor. I'm all about getting out there with your girlfriends and having a good time. But it's...
Me too.
Yes, I know you are. But I think it's kind of the intention behind it. Like, hey, I want to love on you tonight. Let's go out and have a good time. Let's laugh together. Let's talk. Let's rent a movie. And let's say goodbye to this piece of your ex that was really painful to you. And I think all those things are okay. And they're all part of us as humans that we need. But I think being really aware of how I feel when I leave those situations, like, do I feel more inclined to dwell on the negative parts of my divorce and did I get really riled up about how he had wronged me and how I need to seek revenge, or I need to hold on to this bitterness because, yeah, that was wrong? Or do I feel a sense of freedom in being able to go out and have a good time and distract myself from something that was really painful? Yeah, because I think our friends want to help us, but it's important to not indulge us in our, I guess, in our bitterness, because I will say that that is one of the biggest roadblocks to healing. It's one of the hardest things and the biggest roadblocks to healing is forgiveness and bitterness. And choosing forgiveness or choosing to hang on and to be bitter.
Tell us why that's one of the biggest roadblocks to healing.
If I cannot figure out a way to let go of the wrongs that were done to me, then I live in a place of, it's like these wrongs are being currently done to me. And I can't ever expect to have a healthy relationship again because I'm bringing in these wrongs that were done to me and I'm wanting someone else to validate them that has nothing to do with them. So I think it impacts our future relationships and our hope for future relationships. And it impacts my ability to discover who I am again. If I'm holding on to this hurt, then in a way I'm still holding on to those messages of that I wasn't worthy. So I think it impedes our growth and it impedes our healing to continue to focus on those wrongs and to continue to focus on the choices someone else made.
That's such a powerful idea that if we're holding on to the hurts that someone else caused in the past, they're still hurting us.
Absolutely.
That's powerful. And at the same time, I know you're not suggesting this in some sort of Pollyanna, like, you know, go say one prayer and you're going to lose all your anger and bitterness and hatred towards the person that you feel like wounded you the most. I'm assuming that it's a journey. And, you know, again, this could be an entirely other podcast, but what are some of the important steps in the journey towards moving into a space of letting go and replacing bitterness and hatred and anger with some sense of compassion or peace?
Yeah, it is a journey. You're absolutely right. And I hope someday that we can have another podcast or we can have another, you know, meet up over coffee and I can say, I have totally released and forgiven him. I am totally good. It doesn't bother me. But it, like you said, it's a journey. And so I think I get closer to the goal of complete forgiveness and complete letting go, but I'm human and he's human. So there are still things that come up that affect me, sometimes daily, sometimes not as often. But I think one thing that's really helped me, first of all, acknowledging those losses and acknowledging that they're very real and allowing myself to grieve them, not discounting them. And not, like you said, being Pollyanna about it, like, oh, no, it's okay. I forgive you. It's all good. Because that, I don't believe that's what forgiveness is. Forgiveness is not necessarily an acceptance that it's okay that you hurt me, because it's not. It's really an understanding of all the ways we've been hurt, and then going ahead and turning that over to God to handle in the way that He sees fit handling, and knowing that that's not up to me anymore to decide. One thing that's really helped me is for me to stop looking outward at the things that were done to me and looking inward at my own heart and my own perception about those things, and checking in with God every day about ways that I continue to either hurt Him or hurt other people in my life, and understanding my own need for forgiveness and asking for a softening of my heart, because I absolutely can't do forgiveness on my own. I'm completely aware of that, and I completely own that. There's no way. If I were to look at the things that I feel like have impacted me and have forever changed me in my life and my children, I'm a mama bear. They forever impacted my children. There's no way I can do that on my own. So I've really had to go to God and just say, hey, like, this is what I'm struggling with, and I really need help softening my heart and getting a different perspective. And the things that have come from that have been pretty amazing. There's much less anger toward Him. And like you had mentioned, the word compassion and peace, and understanding that perhaps He made the decisions He made. He knew how in that moment, and had no idea the impact and the way it would impact me. But more importantly, the impact it has had on Him, whether He knows it or not. And so I can have some compassion for that and understand that the road He chose is maybe not the best road that's going to lead to happiness for Him. And that's helped me shift some of those beliefs.
Yeah. Well, because you're experiencing God meeting you in this really raw place where it's a bold move to go to God and ask God to make you more aware of the ways you need forgiveness. And then to ask God to soften you requires a complete vulnerability and humility. And then to ask for a different perspective than the one that kind of makes you feel better, that you can blame and be mad and hate the other person, to actually ask God to give you a new perspective that might almost overwhelm you with compassion for another person's brokenness. Right. I mean, that's deep stuff. Beautiful, beautiful work. And that sounds like Jesus work to me.
Yeah.
I love that you're challenging us with that. I want to ask you a few more questions before this time ends. How did you learn to navigate the relationship changes you experienced with couple friends and with in-laws? Because I'm sure that brought on a completely new layer of grief for you.
Yeah, well, I think everybody is going to experience it in a little bit of a different way. I was hopeful that I could still maintain relationship with my in-laws. And that has not happened, unfortunately. And that is not because of anything necessarily that I've done or haven't done. And that again is that compassion piece, because at first I was really hurt by them really stepping out of the relationship with me and not being open to that. But I've since kind of learned and grown that they don't know how to navigate that. They don't know how to maintain loyalty to their son and also love who was once their daughter. So that's been really painful to lose that. And again, another loss. It's been really painful to lose that and to watch my kids continue in that relationship, but to know that I don't have that. So that has been particularly hard. Couples friends, for the most part, I think has been okay. I've retained those friends that sort of knew our story and walked with us through it and continued to love me through it. There have been some people that I think didn't know exactly what to do, so they felt like they needed to choose sides. And I don't know, I don't ever want people to feel that way, but I think people do. So there have, I think, been some strained relationships or probably even some lost relationships in that. Because I think a lot of people don't know how to hold those two things together, like that they can still love both or maybe feel loyal, some sense of loyalty to both. Some people have decided with the decisions that he's made in his life to withdraw their friendship from him. And it's complicated.
Very complicated. Yeah, that's why I asked. I mean, it seems like... Yep. it brings on such another level of grief. And you're a mom too. So you've had to walk through the pain of divorce, which I see so many women doing, while also parenting. And I'm curious what your best advice is for navigating your own pain and trying to seek God's healing while also at the very same time helping your kids navigate theirs.
Yeah. And I think to a certain degree, it really is dependent a little bit on the age of the children, right? And as my children get older, we're able to have more honest conversations. I think that at times in the beginning, I was very much not going to allow any of this pain to affect my children, was the way I thought. I thought I'm going to go on as if nothing has changed in our lives, so that they are not affected at all by this. And as I did that, I realized two different things. One, I was actually not capable of doing that. I was not capable of altering the reality to be something that it wasn't. And I wasn't capable of completely masking my emotions for my kids. And the other thing that I learned is it denies their reality too. It was giving them a message that the pain they were feeling wasn't there, wasn't real, wasn't valid. And so being able to have some honest and appropriate communication with them about the changes that were happening and the hurt that they were experiencing. And, you know, one night, I think my older son walked in on me kind of having a breakdown of tears and crying, and it created a lot of anxiety for him. And so being able to have that conversation as mom's human, mom's hurting, we are going to be okay. And it also allowed me to sort of introduce him to the idea that this is where I'm going to bring my pain. I'm going to bring it to God, and he's got us in this. But the reality is this hurts, and mom is struggling right now. So I think that there's a combination of really wanting to protect our kids from all those painful things, but also wanting to be real with them about the difficulty that I'm experiencing as well as they're experiencing. It's their reality. It's real.
I love that so much. I had a conversation this week with a mom where it just struck me how hard this must be to feel all the feels and then try to protect your kids through it. And I love that you talk about being honest and being appropriate. And I'm sure there's a kind of a balancing act there of like, okay, is this too honest? Is this not honest enough? Appropriate or not appropriate, but not hiding, not pretending this isn't happening, because then we don't give our kids a permission slip to grieve and a permission slip to be sad and a permission slip to say this freaking sucks, you know? So I love that word. As I think about people listening today who maybe, you know, they're not they don't have a divorce, but they're in a marriage right now that's miserable, and they're looking down the pike and thinking this is a mess and divorce is a possibility. What's your advice for them on where they should turn to help to process that?
Oh, that's a really great question. And, you know, I've worked professionally with women and personally with women in this situation. And I guess as a friend, oftentimes I want to be that friend that tells them, well, I want you to be happy. I want you to figure out what it is that makes you happy. A lot of times that really is a short term, like that's what we're feeling right now. That's what we're experiencing right now. And I don't want to necessarily encourage a long-term solution to a short-term problem that feels like it could be irreparable. So I think a lot of prayer and a lot of counsel and wisdom into what taking that next step would really mean and look like, because it is so easy in my shoes and in everyone's shoes to think the grass is greener on the other side. And oftentimes it is briefly, but then it browns just like the grass we're standing in, right? Like life then catches up with us and we're still left with some of those huge major issues that weren't solved by getting a divorce. I certainly have never been in a place where I felt like I could tell someone they have to stay or they can leave. I feel like I'm in a more comfortable space walking with someone through their journey with whatever they decide. But I think offering them wisdom and prayerful consideration before they take that leap, whether it's divorce or whether it's taking divorce off the table is like, we need to really walk slow and carefully. And we need to decide if what we're feeling is a feeling and it's temporary, or if this is a reality we really need to look at. And I think some churches are really good about this. And that's another thing that I've been really fortunate with, is being able to have a support system in my church that can be really supportive. And other churches, I think, maybe don't do such a good job in steering and guiding couples, or in really hearing the deep pains that couples can bring. And I think that is something that as a society and as church and as friends, as communities, we can get better at, is really understanding how difficult marriages can be, and that there are very real pains there. And it's not a, well, sorry, you gotta stick it out. It's a very real reality for people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I would even like plug, you know, we're so big around here about counseling, but if people are in a tough situation right now, processing that with someone that you have set aside every single week that you can process with a mental health therapist is going to be huge. So if you need help today with finding someone, we can help you at Collide. Come to our website, go to our wholeness and counseling page, and we'll help you get the help that you need. My other question for you is, what's your advice for people who are walking through a messy divorce or on the other side of it, and it just still feels so messy and grievous and hard? How do they begin to invite God into all of that mess and pain?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, just the beginning is start by finding a good, maybe Christian counselor that can help guide you and give you a perspective, give you ways to start that process of really being able to open up what's going on inside, as well as directing you where you can take some of those things outside of the counseling session and to take them to God. There's a lot of good resources also out there written by people who have walked this road and been out there and are a little further along in the journey and can offer some wisdom and guidance and some practical steps to what it looks like to really start that journey with God and asking Him and inviting Him into healing.
Kristen, I love that you're purposing your pain, that you're allowing God to take all of it.
Yeah.
And use it to help other people in their pain. And I imagine that there were days or weeks, maybe months, maybe years, I don't know, where it hurt so bad and you never saw how God could end up using it to help other people. What's that like now, to see God using your story to help other people in theirs?
You're so right on. There were times when I was so hurting and angry that it's kind of like someone gives you a gift, right? Or they call it a gift and it's horrible and you don't want it and you're angry because you wanted something else. And sometimes I feel that way about my story, as I go back and forth between like, wow, this is in a way it, I don't want to say gift, but in a way it was God's gift and ministry for me. Right? And He didn't give me the divorce, but He has taken and collected all my pain following this event and said, this is my gift for you to use and repurpose. And so that has been a really hard journey for me, because I still don't want this story necessarily, but it is my story. And I want to move past it and I want to move on. And I am doing that. And one of the ways I do that is recognizing how I can use it for good and how I can recognize that it's other people's stories that they don't want either. And that if I could be a part of that, that I could really help them achieve that healing as well.
Well, Kristen, I love that you have been so open to God molding you. You've been pliable, flexible, humble, seeking him. And and God truly is using your story. He used it today. So thank you for entering into our pain and our grief and pointing towards Jesus in the midst of it. I just really appreciate you. And I know people here will want to connect with you and your counseling work. So how can they do that?
Yeah. So anytime you feel like you want to reach out and chat, you can, I have an email address. I'll give that to you. It's my name, Kristen Than at KristenThanCounseling.com. You can also call me or text me at 360-967-8560 with any thoughts, questions, whatever might come up for you. Those are both great ways to get a hold of me.
Thank you, Kristen, for being on the podcast today.
Yes. Yes. Willow, thank you for having me.
Yeah, totally. For all of you listening, I'm so glad you hopped on. And I hope that today you are given some hope in the midst of the pain and the mess and the grief, whether you're experiencing a divorce, whether you're in a messy marriage, or you are walking alongside people you love who are in those circumstances. If you loved this episode, it would be a huge favor to us if you would rate, review, and subscribe. And it sounds like a simple act, but it's also how we can begin to share this podcast with more and more people like you. Also, if you listen to this conversation with Kristen and you think you have a friend who would be encouraged to hear it, share it with her. What a gift that would be for you to give to her today. So keep colliding, friends, and we'll catch you next week.
Thanks for tuning in. To keep up with us, you can find us on Instagram at we.collide, on Facebook as at We Collide Women, and you can also visit our website at wecollide.net to find our blog, resources, event information, and more. One last thing. If you enjoyed this episode, would you take a few seconds and leave us a review? It seems like such a small act, but reviews help us to keep producing this content and help other women find it too. Thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode and letting us walk with you as you seek and collide with Jesus.